EMS on the Mountain is an entertainment, educational, and commentary product recorded by Sean and Mike and produced by them. Nothing recorded by Sean, Mike, or any of the guests of the show is endorsed nor authorized by their respective employers or agencies unless explicitly outlined. All commentary and statements made are their own. Always follow your respective medical protocols. Nothing said on this platform should be considered medical direction. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to the EMS on the Mountain podcast, a show for those interested in austere and wilderness medicine. This podcast provides insight into the unique aspects and challenges of bringing modern EMS into wilderness and austere environments. Cero, and welcome back to another episode of EMS on the Mountain. And another, as usual, awkward intro because 2 years in and we're still not very good at this stuff. So with that, what are we talking about today? Oh, EMS.
No,
billing.
We generally talk.
Not the most of wilderness of topics, but EMS billing will be the topic of the day. And Mike is going to lament a lot about the state of EMS and billing and why that's a thing. And it does apply and why billing for wilderness stuff is not a thing. For wilderness EMS, anyway. And with that, Michael.
Yeah. For those of you that noticed there was no episode last time, that's because the internet is bad and technology sucks. And there was a whole bunch of noise in the recording and we decided not to put it out there. So you missed a good 27 seconds of me ranting about the billing state of EMS in general. But now we're back in full effect. And we're going to re-record this thing and see if it doesn't suck. But first, a couple of housekeeping announcements. We've made some updates to the website. It was mediocre before, and now it's mediocre plus a little. We've added a couple of bits of functionality that we hope you all will find useful. First and foremost, you can comment on podcasts now, so you can actually make comments on the actual episode. I don't know anyone that actually listens to a podcast on the website for the podcast that it's released on, but if that's your jam and you want to send us questions, there's a methodology to do that now on the website. You can also throw your email at us. And when we do episodes that include visual content, charts, documents, things we generate, you're just going to get those by default. We'll just email us to everybody that gives us their email via the website. And then finally, if you have a rebuttal or you feel we got something wrong or you just want to say something wacky, as long as it's applicable to the episode, and it doesn't include too many words that I wouldn't use. So basically everything you say is eligible. You have the ability to leave a voice message up to 2 minutes long, ranting about whatever it is we said on the podcast, and we will listen to it. And if it applies and it seems like a reasonable point, whether it agrees with us or not, we're happy to publish it. We'll do all of those anonymously. We'll put them into the podcast as a rebuttal section or an FU, if you will, for follow-up to an episode. So if anybody has thoughts or disagrees with us and wants to tell us you disagree with us, you can pop on over to the website. And on the right-hand side, there's a leave a message button now, a little tab. And if you leave a voicemail and it feels applicable, we'll play it on the podcast completely anonymously. We won't even tell people. I don't think you have to give any content about who you are anyway. So you can just leave scathing remarks and we will play them if they apply. Let's talk about billing. Billing is a train wreck. Mm-hmm. But to understand why we can't really bill for care in a wilderness setting, we have to also understand a little bit about how billing works in the EMS world. Sean, I feel like I've asked you this question already because we've already recorded this, but Sean, do you know what CMS stands for?
Is the Centers for, what is it, Medicaid and Medicare Services or something to that effect?
Yep, something to that effect. Medicare / Medicaid is the largest single payer in the United States. The United States, for those of you listening from other nations, may or may not realize that the United States is not a single payer healthcare system. It's the largest non-single-payer healthcare system in the world. Fundamentally, our government entities, the Medicare, Medicaid system, is still the single biggest payer in the healthcare system. And as such, pretty much all of the insurance companies also follow the guidance from CMS on what they're willing to reimburse for medical activity. There's four components to billing for EMS. There's a flat rate component that is basically a stipend. Like, hey, thanks for being there. Appreciate it. We're going to get you a flat rate. It's based on transport. Then there's a modifier. So if you're performing additional ALS services, there's two tiers. It's called ALS-1, ALS-2. There's also some accelerators on the model to... The theory is to help compensate rural environments for providing care. And then this all gets calculated against what's called the per miles fee, or in some parlance in billing systems, they call this loaded miles. Because you cannot bill for the miles you have to drive to get to the patient. You can only bill for the miles in which the patient is in your ambulance and taken to a destination for care. Yeah, I think I just summed that up nicely. This is going to go from being an hour-long podcast to being a 40-minute podcast, because a bunch of my ranting from previous just isn't going to be the same. And none of you will ever hear that, because it's going to go to the annals of history as an episode that had too much static in the background. Basically,
but I think one thing that needs... Yeah, no, sorry.
No, please, go ahead.
What I was going to say is I think a lot of people don't understand that why are billing and why EMS agencies don't make a lot of money, especially 911 agencies in particular. It's because there's no billing for any treatments other than that, as you mentioned, the modifiers ALS 1 and 2, and that's based on numbers of procedures and meds things, which is arbitrary, but whatever. It is what it is. It's part of the great system. But it's cents on the dollar mileage. And so if you had a 1.2-mile transport, you're going to get reimbursed, and I'm making numbers up here because I don't have the numbers sitting in front of me, but you're going to get $3.50 for that transport, despite the amount of work a paramedic or an EMT may have done, especially at the ALS level, like intubations, drugs, cardioversion, like maybe all kinds of stuff. We might have had a significant trauma patient where there's a lot of stabilization and resuscitation, everything that went on, and your agency was able to bill for a bunch of ALS, so they got $5 instead of $3.50, just because you were close to the hospital. And I think what that also brings up, and I'm just going to toss this in now, is why a lot of the for-profit or private ambulance services that are out there, even if they have contracts with municipalities to provide 911 services, this is also why they do predominantly inter-facility transports, because that's a whole different billing ballgame. And they make a lot more money doing interfacility work than they do 911 work. And as Mike pointed out, that is the reason why, because of CMS and the billing. And it's not really billing, it's the billable items and the insurance reimbursements. And so for a lot of folks that aren't aware of that, that is why everybody's just like, why don't we just bill for all the things? That's why you can't bill for all the things. Even if you add them to the list, it only gets you a little bit more in the grand scheme of all that reimbursement. So, there you go.
So to sum up the hot mess, pre-hospital EMS billing for 911 response is billed under a model of mileage, not under a model of care provided. So if you go to the doctor place, earlier today, in fact, I was in an emergency facility having a chat with my medical director. Every nurse running around in that facility, every procedure and interaction with my with the doctor in the emergency room, those are all billable events, right? Nurse draws blood, goes to the lab, gets an x-ray, the whole nine yards. All of that is billable, quote unquote, billable activity. Those are things that have a rate associated with them. There's rate cards and things that go with it. I'm not going to get into all the deep, dark details, and I am certainly not an expert in billing, but you can go to the emergency room for a bellyache and end up having a $2,000 bill that your insurance company pays a large swath of. You can end up having a $10,000 bill. I just heard of a guy I know recently that his dog was in the emergency room for doggies for like 4 days, and it was a $16,000 bill
Because veterinary emergency medicine is stupid crazy.
Yeah. I don't, I'm assuming you can get insurance for animals, but I don't know anything because I don't
You
have
can. Pets. I have a pet, but I don't have doggo health insurance.
One of these days you're going to get the bill, man. I also learned recently that something like 80% of our healthcare spend on average, like per person on average, 80% of your spend is done in the last 2 years of life. So basically just whack those 2 years off and save yourself and your family a whole lot of pain.
And not to get into weirdness, but that's why several years ago when they started the Affordable Care Act, that's why it was mandatory because they needed all the young, healthy people to pay into a system for that 10% of the aging people that cost the 90% of healthcare costs.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love healthcare. So anyway, I'm going to get back to billing for EMS because that's really the topic at hand. And hopefully this is going to help folks understand that why there isn't a lot of money in doing pre-hospital medicine, much less wilderness pre-hospital medicine. So I mentioned a couple of minutes ago that billing is based on loaded miles. So the cost of maintaining the equipment, the cost of acquiring the equipment, the cost of supplies, all of those things are just capital sunk cost that unless volunteer agencies are doing fundraising or breakfast in the morning or bingo or whatever they do, right?
Yeah. Pancake breakfast, dog.
Got to do those things to cover the cost because there's no guarantee other than tax base. There's no other methodology in the system right now to pay for those things. And at the end of the day, I'd wager to say 30%+ of transports are probably not profitable. They may cover the bill of the transport, but the capital cost of the $500,000 ambulance and the supplies and the licenses and the training and the building and the bingo hall and all the things, that's not just going to be covered by transport costs because all you get to do is bill per mile multiplied by the accelerators. A BLS emergency call gets a 1.6 accelerator and ALS 1 is a 1.9, for example. Specialty care, which to get specialty care, you have to meet some really restricted criteria, is like 3.25. But then that's still only multiplied by the number of miles from the patient's contact location to the emergency room. That's all you get to bill for.
Yeah.
Well, last time I checked, in a lot of wilderness settings, we don't get in an ambulance and go to the patient. Like, we don't drive an ambulance through the woods. Like, driving through the woods. There's no road. It's cool. We got to go in on foot. We got to hoof it. There is actually a mechanism for flight services to recuperate some cost. That's typically air medical transport for interfacility, where, as Sean mentioned, that's a different contract. I know for a fact the air medical system, the agencies that operate in the area we do work, consider every scene call. For those that don't know, a scene call is referred to as, or it's the term used to refer to a 911 response for a helicopter, an air ambulance helicopter, to come to a scene and take somebody to the hospital because they're really jacked up. A scene call is usually just written off as a loss leader. They come because it's the right thing to do, but they don't expect to actually recoup the cost of the flight. It doesn't happen. And a lot of people say, oh my God, will you get massive bills from the helicopter? Got to keep in mind that insurance reimbursement is based on sending a bill. And then the insurance company comes back and says, we're only going to pay this much for what you said really cost that much. And a lot of times agencies have to accept what was offered them, or they have to send their customer, their patient, to collections for the rest of it. And a lot of times it just doesn't get paid. So while you might hear of astronomical scene flight bills, the reality is a lot of those bills are soft billed, meaning they send a bill and then when it doesn't get paid, they just write it off. There's a lot of...
Yeah, so they get... Yeah, you get 500 out of 2,000 bucks and it's like, okay, good enough.
Yeah, there's a lot of what I will call wonky accounting that has to occur in the maths of flight systems. Ground transport as well. So what does this mean? This means that all the things that we do pre-hospitally are not billable, which means one of two things. It's really quite simple. Man, this is going to be a way shorter podcast than it was last time because I'm not ranting as I was before. The cost of all your supplies, the super fancy Cascade Designs titanium Stokes that's super light with a brake and all this fanciness on it, none of that can be paid for directly through billing the patient for the care because there isn't a methodology to bill for providing care in a wilderness setting. It doesn't exist. That doesn't mean that we don't do it, but all that means that all those compensating factors have to be paid for either through fundraising or through tax base. That's really the only other way you're going to find the money. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to find the money through the act of billing. So a lot of folks I know, a lot of agencies I know, just don't bill for the transport because it's the small aspect of the entire contact. And the burden for smaller agencies and wilderness, really rural wilderness agencies, the burden to pay for the billing company to help them with it and all the back and forth and the administrative headache associated with it is cheaper for them to do the fundraising to pay for the supplies they need or scrape or hope for donations as opposed to hoping to pay for all those things with donations. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And since we're talking the wilderness piece here, I think something that I think people should also consider and be aware of is, like you and I, either as partners or one singly, we get split up. We have a patient. Mm-hmm. We gain IV access. Maybe we give some fluids to during the carry out, the evacuation, pain management, maybe some sedation, and who knows what else, right? Whether that's a 2 hours, 4 hours, or 16-hour contact, and we turn over to another transporting agency, because a lot of times these patients, for where Mike and I are, they won't be transferred over to our particular agency's ambulance just because of location and staffing. So they might come from a, I won't quite say mutual aid, but one of the other neighboring jurisdictions, and we'll say, hey, we'll meet you here, pick up a patient. All that work we did is not billable because it wasn't done with the ambulance during the transport. And for the most part, unless that crew or that agency fudges the books a bit, all the meds and drugs and procedures that were done ahead of time in maybe a 5-mile transport from where they received the patient till that hospital also would not be eligible for billing. Now, I'm not certain, but yep. I think they could still call that like an ALS-1 call. So they could recoup a little bit just because there's maintenance of some of these things. Like you or I would have to pull out all the ALS interventions and then turn it over as a BLS patient, basically. But that's just something that's generally not done. They wouldn't get to call that a BLS or an ALS-2 for all the meds or other procedures. So there's not a huge incentive for agencies to want to pick up from us either, other than it's just the right thing to do for people. It's not like they're going to get a big billing bonus out of that one either.
I guess I'm going to make this a pretty short episode because I don't need to go on and on about this. But we have gotten the question quite a few times, like, why is... I've not really seen the question of why is there no money in being a pre-hospital provider in the wilderness? But I have heard questions of why aren't there a lot of wilderness EMS jobs? Why are these jobs so hard to find? There's no money in this. It's not a job. It's a passion. It is a secondary or cursory duty for other agencies, land management agencies, local parks, national parks, forest service areas, those sorts of things. But fundamentally, the concept of having an agency with its primary responsibility of doing wilderness EMS in super rural environments, super wilderness environments, doesn't make sense because there's no income flow to cover the cost of having an EMS agency with the material and the equipment and the supplies necessary to provide that ALS level of care, because there's no way for them to bill for the provision of the care to the patient unless they want to direct bill and find some legal loophole that I don't know about. See, use our new voicemail feature. Let us know. But I don't know of any loophole that allows an agency to send their own bill based on what they thought was the appropriate cost of doing things for a patient. And then, honestly, who would want to then pay that bill? Oh, I broke my leg in the woods. They came, they carried me out. They took me to an ambulance. Well, I'm going to go ahead and pay that $10,000 bill for all their time. It's not going to happen. So it's paid for through tax base and through other revenue generating methodologies like grants, donations, things like that.
And I think that kind of brings up another discussion, right? Like you and I support a federal agency who is subsidized by tax dollars. So you and I wouldn't see money regardless, right? Now, if you are an independent, third-party, non-government affiliated wilderness EMS response agency, and this is where not to get you fired up, but the David Pfeiffer paramedic practitioner model, this is one of the few areas that it would have any sort of benefit, in my personal opinion, is, okay, now if Mike's a paramedic practitioner, you could bill for your things, but not as a federal agency thing, because that's a whole nother, well, yeah, not to say you couldn't. It's just, there's a lot of weird legal stuff that gets into this, but you'd have to be part of that independent third party agency that would be billing, because you're not being subsidized by other tax dollars and things like that, which is why most municipal ambulances, you don't get a bill from them, like that are fire-based, right? Because the service is already being funded through taxpayer dollars. It's the private companies that take a contract with a major city that also get to bill, right? So they're the ones that are billing for 911 plus interfacility, because mm-hmm. they don't receive the same taxpayer funding. They're on a contract, and that's a baseline amount. And then any money they make off of billing is theirs to do with as they see fit. So yeah, I think unless you do that third party, non-taxpayer subsidized thing, there's really no way on the wilderness side to pay, not in the US, right? Overseas, I don't know how all that works. For if you were providing austere medical support for some expedition, you're not going to get paid for the work you did. Like the expedition paid for your time, and it probably paid yeah. for your meds and supplies. So
that's exactly how I've been paid for expeditionary things. And that's exactly how right. it works. I provide a list of things, equipment and supplies that are going to be required to yep. provide care should the event occur. That has to be paid for by the expedition. I go find or am given medical direction, medical oversight, allowing me to practice and provide care
yep.
on the expedition. But I'm not compensated, and there's no way for the expeditionary system, unless they have an agreement to bill for anything I do for people, but there isn't a system in place to allow me to bill for the events. I cannot go independently bill. I'm not a right. paramedic practitioner, because they don't exist.
Well, no, nobody. That's not true. Outside of the military, they don't exist.
Is there a paramedic practitioner function in the military that bills?
They don't bill, they can. Okay. And essentially, there are practitioner levels because they get MPIs and they can prescribe meds.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So that's why they are technically, and it's for the Special Operations Independent Duty Corpsmen that are out there, for my naval service brethren. Those guys actually okay. are paramedic level practitioners, and they have their MPIs, but they don't, obviously they don't bill because the client base doesn't require that, but it's so they can prescribe meds yeah. independent of a physician. So there technically are, but that's the only place that I'm aware of that is the only place, because right now for us dirty civilians, there is no such thing as a paramedic level practitioner.
Right. And now, since we brought up the whole paramedic practitioner thing, I am going to say, I still don't think it's a good idea. And we've done podcasts on this before. Now I'm going to go full me.
I tried not to bring it up. It was applicable to the discussion, and
yeah, it's coming.
Please begin your rant.
Paramedic practitioner or not, let's just leave that off the table. The reality is the EMS system and EMS care in this country has to figure out how to bill appropriately and get disconnected from being an Uber, right? Fundamentally,
yes.
I guess I'm going to do the same rant I did last time that we threw away, right? EMS is treated like a damn Uber. We bill per mile, right? It's a cost for the distance to the hospital. We are not seen as part of the integrated healthcare system in general. Wilderness, not wilderness, whatever. That's just the state of affairs. And if we want to provide good pre-hospital care in this country, we have to treat people like they're practitioners. Oh,
and why?
Okay. So,
and why? Because I'll try to make it simple for you, right? Who EMS began under the Department of Transportation. Where's EMS still? The Department of Transportation.
Department of Transportation.
And so under the CMS system, EMS is a medical transportation service, not a provider of medical care. And that is, right. in my opinion, step one of fixing the mess is take out that verbiage that says you are a transportation service, and you could pretty much just do that and then you're pretty well fine. Or if you want to insert a line in, line out, you're not a transportation, but you are pre-hospital medical service provider. Okay, yeah. Then boom, we're done. And then we can start billing all we want for providing pre-hospital medicine. But
I would even argue that there's a step one before that. And this is a mentality thing of EMS on whole. We are not the load them up and drive fast agencies anymore. The amount of education and the scope of care provided by I'm not going to say this about everyone, but I will say that BLS providers are included in my statement here. We are practitioners of medicine. We provide good quality care. We just don't do it inside of a building called a hospital, urgent care, or any sort of medical facility. And we're treated differently as such. It's because it grew up out of the model of scoop them up, drive fast, drop them off.
Yeah.
It did not grow up under a model of pre-hospital care. I work in systems that have blood programs. We have ventilators. We have pumps. We have all sorts of medications to fix things, right? That isn't a, hey, hurry up, pick them up and get them there. And the reality right? is, statistically, 30% of Americans do not have a relationship with the medical establishment until they go to an emergency room. So we are, quote unquote, the front line for a lot of people to be provided appropriate care for 30% of the population of this country. And we still get talked about like we drive around in a fucking Uber, pick you up and take you to the guy that can actually do the care. We do the care. We do a lot of the care. The math is pretty simple. For other than a couple of procedural things and differential diagnoses tools like x-rays and CT scanners, and in some systems they have CT scanners in ambulances, we're doing all the things to fix the immediate boo-boos and keep you alive, and largely are the intervening factor before you get there, especially in a wilderness world where you're not going to see a doctor for maybe hours. Even if you could have a doctor with us right there and you're really jacked up, guess who the doctor's looking to? He's looking to us, because it turns out we're the ones that know how to do stuff in an austere environment, or you know, with limited supplies and prioritize the ABCs and get it did. It's not the doctor.
And I just will caveat on that. And you and I have had this discussion with several physicians we work with teaching a specific course. And you know, these doctors are spread out through the instructor cadre. And I think almost every one of them looks at like me, Mike, or some of the other paramedics that are involved with this program. And are like, yeah, no, I'll stand there and I'll give you some advice. But dude, this is your show. This is what you do.
And it's let me know what orders you need. The answer is yes.
But it's. Yeah, that's essentially what it is this is the world you work in. Like, I'm a doctor. Yeah, I went to med school for a very long time. I got a shitload of knowledge and experience. But pre-hospitally, it is a different environment. And I do appreciate those doctors that understand that and know the difference and have seen that different level of work. And you and I, not to make this a whole nother weird rant, but how many times have you and I, just the two of us, on our wilderness gig, run into some very well-meaning nurses who, outside of one instance, were absolutely useless in the situation, right? And we're talking about educated, knowledgeable, experienced providers. It's just not their environment, right? I know so many nurses who work in the ED that it's like absolutely solid, wonderful people and providers, but you take them out of that environment and most of them they're like, yeah, no, that's not what I do.
Rating. I don't like this. Yeah.
It's like, my bed needs to be able to come up to my level. Like, I'm not kneeling down there in the mud. let me know if I can get something for you. I'll be in the truck. And again, so there's a very distinct difference, and it is very much time that the nation as a whole, and not just EMS people, grasp that and run with it. Like I said, there's a lot of good physicians that are out there that really understand the work pre-hospital folks do, particularly the 911 system, let alone, we're not going to even necessarily austere medical stuff, but not every one of those, even medical directors for a 911 system, I don't think I'm sure there's some that are still out there that really don't understand what their paramedics are doing and the knowledge and skill set that they already have, even brand new entry-level paramedics. paramedic school graduates of 2024 are not the same paramedics you graduated in 1984, right? It is a completely, completely different profession, but it's holy crap, people.
It's you and I's close favorite to being a different profession.
Yeah. You and I's favorite educator, lecturer, we won't mention his name, but he's clearly starting to date himself with his knowledge and his presentations, because he's a paramedic of the 1980s. And for someone who is continued to stay, we'll say, on the lecturing circuit and allegedly still holds his card and does work.
Yeah.
He's getting way behind the times, right? Like passive pre-oxygenation. Oh, that's all hokum and witchcraft. It's like, no, there's actually been a lot of studies on this and it's good. So don't be scared of that. And 12 leads are only to find STEMIs kind of shit. It's like, bro, no. Like,
yeah.
It's, yeah. So I think there is, and you are right, there needs to be a larger national educational component, not of paramedics, although there needs to be a component of that to tell paramedics, this is what you need to be telling people you do and the support you need. Not just, don't just bitch about money, but be able to explain why you do what you do and the value you're bringing to this game. And yeah. I know COVID helped a little bit with people understanding that, holy shit, these medics out there are already starting people on various airway management things and starting the whole big resuscitation piece before they even get to hospitals. You know, like, I don't even know how many studies that are out there that all show the more work paramedics and EMS providers in general, even the EMT levels, right? Like an EMT who gets aspirin on board of a recognized potential heart attack 40 minutes before they get to a hospital does significantly more help to people than not.
Yes, that's absolutely true. But
the reduction in morbidity and mortality by well-trained EMS providers starting treatments before they even get to the hospital, there's dozens of studies that support this of varying conditions, whether it's cardiac, sepsis, airway problems, et cetera, right? So there needs to be an education, and in really, it needs to be at like med schools where it's like, hey, you're all going to be doctors here soon. This is something that you need to be aware of. And I don't care what your specialty is. I don't care if you're going to be a podiatrist and you have no intention of going anywhere but private practice and work for some, I don't know, whatever, some specialty clinic somewhere. You should be aware of what pre-hospital people have and do. And anyway, whole nother topic. We're way off shit now, but no, yeah, folks.
It's applicable, fixing it.
Yeah, it really is. Because you got to get the, and I won't say it's unfortunate, but the reality is, even with the number of paramedics we have out there that do have college degrees and advanced degrees, and there's a few out there with PhDs, we're still the minority in this thing. And the voice of the physician will always carry louder and farther. And so we need the physicians to stand up, and not just our medical directors, but all those ED, critical care, family practice guys that are dialing 911 because I can't handle this. You paramedic, take this person to the hospital for me. All those doctors need to be the ones advocating up there at that national level, saying, we need to fix this. We need to get it so these guys are recognized, no shit, healthcare providers. And then be able to start fixing that billing problem and all these other issues that surround it.
Yeah.
And that's my rant.
I feel like we could rant for a while, but we should probably stop here. This was significantly shorter than the first one we recorded, but that's okay.
I think this one conveys the message a little bit better than.
Yeah, I agree.
Time. We went down some dark holes last time, folks. And some of you might want to hear that.
Someday. Perhaps someday. I still have the audio. Someday. We'll just put that dirty, fuzzy, scratchy audio out there. And years from now, after this has all been fixed.
What we should do is maybe pull some of those topics out and have shows just on those other topics. So,
yeah, it's actually
the ones we haven't already covered before. But anyway,
let's call this done then. I'm going to hit the stop button because we're so good at having an eloquent departure from the end of the podcast, too. So, here it comes.
Yeah. Our outros are good. As our intros.
Yeah. They're amazing.
And stuff.
you have any questions or comments or ideas for show topics, you can send us an email at theshow@emsonthemountain.com or hit us up on social media. We can be found on Facebook and Instagram at EMS on the Mountain, Twitter at EMSOTM, or you can engage with us and a whole community of wilderness EMS professionals at locals.com/wilderness EMS.
Until the next episode, thanks for joining us. And until we see you on the mountain, train hard, be safe, and do good work.